between worlds. It was forbidden, outlawed long before her husband and her brothers were born. Once the last of the ancient wayfarers had died out, the paths between realms were sealed, their methods of world walking lost with them. Or so all had thought. But deep in her husband's private library, she found the old spells. She began with small experiments. First, she opened a door to the realm of resting, to find one of those wayfarers and ask her how it was properly done. A knowing smile. The wayfarer refused to tell her. So the queen began to teach herself, opening and closing doors long since forgotten or sealed, peering deep into the workings of the cosmos. Her own world became a cage. She grew tired of her husband's warring, his casual cruelty. And when he went away to war once again, the queen gathered her closest handmaidens, opened a door to a new world, and left the one she'd been born into. She left? Aelin blurted. She just left her own world? Permanently? It had never been her world, not really. She had been born to rule others. Where did she go? That smile grew a bit. To a fair, lovely world, where there was no war, no darkness, not like that in which she had been born. She was made a queen there, too, was able to hide herself within a new body so that none could know what she was beneath, so that even her own husband would not recognize her. Did he ever find her again? No, though he looked, found out all she'd learned and taught it to himself and his brothers. They tore apart world after world to find her. And when they arrived at the world where she had made her new home, they did not know her. Even as they went to war, she did not reveal herself. She won. And two of the kings, her husband included, were banished back to their own world. The third remained trapped, his power nearly broken. He crawled off into the depths of the earth, and the victorious queen spent her long, long existence preparing for his return, preparing her people for it. For the three kings had gone beyond her methods of world walking. They had found a way to permanently open a gate between worlds, and had made three keys to do so. To wield those keys was to control all worlds, to have the power of eternity in the palm of your hand. She wished to find them, only so she might possess the strength to banish any enemies, banish her husband's youngest brother back to his realm, to protect her new lovely world. It was all she ever wanted, to dwell in peace, without the shadow of her past hunting her. From far away, that ghost of memory pushed, as if she'd forgotten to douse a flame left burning in her room. And did the queen find the keys? Maeve's smile turned sad. Do you think she did, Aelin? Aelin considered. So many of their chats, their lessons in this glen, held deeper puzzles, questions for her to work through, to help her when she one day took her throne, Rowan at her side. As if she'd summoned him, the pine and snow scent of her mate filled the clearing. A rustle of wings, and there he was, perched in hawk form on one of the towering oaks. Her warrior prince. She smiled toward him, as she had for weeks now, when he'd come to escort her back to her rooms in the River Palace. It was during those walks from forest to mist-shrouded city that she had come to know him. Love him. More than she had ever loved anything. Aelin again faced her aunt. The queen was clever and ambitious. I would think she could do anything, even find the keys. So you would believe. And yet they eluded her. Where did they go? Maeve's dark stare unwaveringly held hers. Where do you think they went? Aelin opened her mouth. I think... She blinked. Paused. Maeve's smile returned, soft and kind, as her aunt had been to her from the start. Where do you think the keys are, Aelin? She opened her mouth once more, and again halted. Like an invisible chain yanked her back, silenced her. Chain. A chain. She glanced down at her hands, her wrists, as if expecting them to be there. She had never felt a shackle's bite in her life, and yet... She stared at the empty place on her wrist, where she could have sworn there was a scar. Only smooth, sun-kissed skin remained. If this world were at risk, if those three terrible kings threatened to destroy it, where would you go to find the keys? Aelin looked up at her aunt. Another world. There was another world. Like a fragment of a dream, there was another world, and in it she had a wrist with a scar on it, had scars all over. And her mate, perched overhead. He had a tattoo down his face and neck and arm in that world. A sad story. His tattoo told a sad, awful story about loss. Loss caused by a dark queen. Where are the keys hidden, Aelin? That placid, loving smile remained on Maeve's face, and yet. No, Aelin breathed. Something slithered in the depths of her aunt's stare. No, what? This wasn't her existence. Her life. This place, these blissful months learning in Doranel, finding her mate. Blood and sand and crashing waves. No! Her voice was a thunderclap through the peaceful glen. Aelin bared her teeth, fingers curling in the moss. Maeve let out a soft laugh. Rowan flapped from the branches to land on the queen's upraised arm. He didn't so much as fight it when she wrapped her thin white hands around his neck and snapped it. Aelin screamed, clutching at her chest, at the shredding mating bond. Aelin arched off the altar, and every broken and torn part of her body screamed with her. Above her, Maeve was smiling. You liked that vision, didn't you? Not real. That had not been real. Rowan was alive. He was alive. She tried to move her arm. Red-hot lightning lashed her, and she screamed again. Only a broken rasp came out. Broken, just as her arm now lay. Now lay. Bone gleamed, jutting upward along more places than she could count, blood and twisted skin and... No shackle scars, even with the wreckage. In this world, this place, she did not have scars either. Another illusion, another spun dreamscape. She screamed again, screamed at her ruined arm, the unscarred skin, screamed at the lingering echo of the severed mating bond. Do you know what pains me most, Aelin? Maeve's words were soft as a lover's. It's that you believe I'm the villain in this. Aelin sobbed through her teeth as she tried and failed to move her arm. Both arms. She cast her gaze through the space, this real yet not room. They'd repaired the box, had welded a new slab of iron over the lid, then over the sides, the bottom. Less air trickled in, the hours or days now spent inside near suffocating heat. It had been a relief when she'd finally been chained to the altar. Whenever that had been, if it had even happened at all. I have no doubt that your mate or Elena or even Brennan himself filled your head with lies about what I'll do with the keys. Maeve ran a hand over the stone lip of the altar, right through her splattered blood and shards of bone. I meant what I said. I like this world. I do not wish to destroy it, only improve it. Imagine a realm where there is no hunger, no pain. Isn't that what you and your cohorts are fighting for? A better world. The words were a mockery. A mockery of what she'd promised so many, what she had promised Terrison, and still owed it. Aelin tried not to shift against the chains, against her broken arms, against the tight pressure pushing on her skin from the inside. A rising intensity along her bones, in her head. A little more every day. Maeve heaved a small sigh. I know what you think of me, Firebringer, what you assume. But there are some truths that cannot be shared, even for the keys. Yet the growing strain cracking within her, smothering the pain. Perhaps worse. Maeve cupped her cheek over the mask. The queen who was promised. I wish to save you from that sacrifice, offered up by a headstrong girl. A soft laugh. I'd even let you have Rowan. The two of you here together. While you and I work to save this world. The words were lies. She knew it, though she couldn't quite remember where one truth ended and the lie began. If her mate had belonged to another before her, been given away, or had that been the nightmare? Gods, the pressure in her body, her blood. You do not yield. You can feel it, even now. Maeve went on. The urge of your body to say yes. Aelin opened her eyes, and confusion must have glittered there, because Maeve smiled. Do you know what being encased in iron does to a magic wielder? You wouldn't feel it immediately. But as time goes on, your magic needs release, Aelin. That pressure is your magic screaming it wants you to come free of these chains and release the strain. Your very blood tells you to heed me. Truth. Not the submission part, but the deepening pressure she knew would be worse than any pain from burnout. She'd felt it once, when plunging as far into her power as she'd ever gone. That would be nothing compared to this. I am leaving for a few days, Maeve said. Aelin stilled. Maeve shook her head in a mockery of disappointment. You are not progressing as quickly as I wished, Aelin. Across the room, Fenris let out a warning snarl. Maeve didn't so much as glance at him. It has come to my attention that our mutual enemy has been spotted again on these shores. One of them, a Volg prince, was contained a few days' journey from here near the southern border. It brought with it several callers, no doubt to use on my own people, perhaps even on me. No. No. Maeve brushed a hand over Aelin's neck, as if tracing a line where the collar would go. So I will go myself to retrieve that collar, to see what Erewhon's minion might say for itself. I ripped apart the Volg princes who encountered me in the first war, she said quietly. It shall be rather easy, I suppose, to instead bend them to my will. Well, bend one to my will and wrest it from Erewhon's control. Once I put its collar around your neck. No. The word was a steady chant, a rising shriek within her. I don't know why I didn't think of it before, Maeve mused. No. Maeve poked Aelin's shattered wrist, and Aelin swallowed her scream. Think on it. And when I return, let's discuss my proposition again. Maybe all that growing strain will make you see more clearly, too. A collar. Maeve was going to retrieve a wordstone collar. Maeve turned, black gown swirling with her. She crossed the threshold, and her owl swooped from its perch atop the open door to land upon her shoulder. I'm sure Cairn will find ways to entertain you while I'm away. She didn't know how long she lay on the altar, after the healers swept in with their sweet-smelling smoke. They'd put the metal gauntlets back on her. With each hour, the pressure beneath her skin grew, even in that heavy, drugged sleep. As if once she'd acknowledged it, it wouldn't be ignored or contained. It would be the least of her problems if Maeve put a collar around her neck. Fenris sat by the wall, concern bright in his eyes as he blinked. Are you all right? She blinked twice. No. No, she was not anywhere near to all right. Maeve had been waiting for this. Waiting for this pressure to begin, worse than anything Cairn might do. And with the collar, Maeve now went to personally retrieve. She couldn't let herself contemplate it. A more horrific form of slavery. One she might never escape, never be able to fight. Not a breaking of the Firebringer, but an erasure. To take all she was, power and knowledge, and rip it from her. To have her trapped inside while she witnessed her own voice yield the location of the word keys. Swear the blood oath to Maeve. Wholly submit to her. Fenris blinked four times. I am here. I am with you. She answered in kind. I am here. I am with you. Her magic surged, seeking a way out, filling the gaps between her breath and bones. She couldn't find room for it, couldn't do anything to soothe it. You do not yield. She focused on the words, on her mother's voice. Perhaps the magic would devour her from the inside before Maeve returned. But she did not know how she'd endure it. Endure another few days of this, let alone the next hour. To ease the strain, just a fraction. She shut down the thoughts that snaked into her mind. Her own or Maeve's, she didn't care. Fenris blinked again, the same message over and over. I am here. I am with you. Aelin closed her eyes, praying for oblivion. Get up. A mockery of words she'd once heard. Cairn stood above her, a smile twisting his hateful face, and the wild light in his eyes. Aelin went still as he began unfastening her chains. Guards stomped in. Fenris snarled. The pressure writhed against her skin, pounding in her head like a brutal hammer, worse than the tools of breaking dangling at Cairn's side. Maeve wants you moved, he said, that feverish light growing as he hoisted her up and carried her to the box. Let her drop into it so hard the chains clanked against her bones, her skull. Her eyes watered, and she lunged up, but the lid slammed shut. Darkness, hot and tight, pressed in, the twin to what grew under her skin. With Morath creeping onto these shores again, she wants you moved somewhere more secure until she returns. Cairn crooned through the lid. Guards grunted, and the box lifted, Aelin shifting, biting her lip against the movement. I don't give a shit what she does to you once she puts that demon collar around your throat. But until then, I'll get you all to myself, won't I? A last little bout of fun for you and me, until you find yourself with a new friend inside you.
Dread coiled in her stomach, smothering the pressure. Moving her to another location? She had once warned a young healer about that. Had told her if an attacker tried to move her, they would most definitely kill her, and she was to make a final stand before they could. And that was without the threat of a Wordstone collar traveling closer with each passing day. But Cairn wouldn't kill her. Not when Maeve needed her alive. Aelin focused on her breathing. In and out. Out and in. It didn't keep the oily, sharp fear from taking hold, from making her start shaking.
You are to join us, Fenris, Cairn said, laughter in his voice as Aelin slid against the metal of the box while they walked up the stairs. I wouldn't want you to miss a heartbeat of this.
Chapter 21. Rowan knew every path, traveled and hidden into Doranel. Both the lush kingdom and the sprawling city it had been named after. So did Gavriel and Lorkin. They'd sold their horses the night before, Elide bartering for them. The Fey warriors were too recognizable, and if their faces weren't noted, the sheer presence of their power would be. Few wouldn't know who they were. Unlike the northern border with Wendlin, no wild wolves guarded the southern roads into the kingdom. But they'd still kept hidden, taking half-forgotten pathways on their trek northward. And when they were a few days away from the outer limits of the city, they had laid their trap for Maeve, what he knew the queen might not be able to resist coming to retrieve herself. Wordstone callers. Aelin had not broken yet. He knew it, had felt it. It would likely be driving Maeve mad. So the temptation to use one of the Wordstone callers, the arrogance he knew Maeve possessed that would allow her to believe she might control the demon within, wrested away from Erewhon himself, it would indeed be too great an opportunity for the queen to pass up. So they had begun with rumors, fed by Elide at taverns and markets, at the places where Rowan knew Maeve's spies would be listening. Whispers of a Fey garrison who had captured a Volg prince, the strange callers they found on him. The location, an outpost leagues away. The callers, anyone's for the taking. He didn't bother to pray to the gods that Maeve fell for it, that she didn't send one of her spies instead to retrieve the callers or confirm their existence. A fool's gamble, but the only one they could make. And as they scaled the steep southern hillocks that would offer them a view of the night-veiled city at last, Rowan's heart thundered in his chest. They might not have Maeve's cloaking abilities, but without the blood oath, they could remain undetected. Though Maeve's eyes were everywhere, her net of power spread far and wide across this land, and so many others. Their breathing was labored as they half-crawled to the highest of the wooded hills. There were other ways into the city, yes, but none that offered a view of the terrain before them. Rowan hadn't risked flying, not when keen-eyed patrols no doubt searched for a white-tailed hawk, even under cover of darkness. Only 30 feet to the summit now. Rowan kept climbing, the others close behind. She was here. She'd been here the entire time. If they'd come directly to Doranel. He didn't let himself consider it. Not as he cleared the hilltop. Under the sliver of a moon, the gray-stoned city was bathed in white, wreathed in mist from the surrounding rivers and waterfalls. Elide, amid her panting, gasped. I thought it would be like Morath, she admitted. The serene city lay in the heart of a river basin. Lanterns still glowed despite the late hour, and he knew that in some squares music would be playing. Home. Or it had been. Were its citizens still his people when he'd wed a foreign queen? When he'd fought and killed so many of them on Ilway's waters? He didn't look for the black mourning banners that would be hanging from so many windows. Beside him, he knew Lorkin and Gavriel were avoiding counting them too. For centuries they had known these people, lived amongst them, called them friends. But were any aware of who was held in their midst? Had they heard her screams? That's the place. Gavriel said to Elide, pointing toward the cluster of domes and elegant buildings set on the eastern edge, right along the lip of the massive waterfall. None of them spoke, as they scanned the column-lined building that housed the queen's private quarters and their own suites. No lights burned within. It doesn't confirm anything, Lorkin said, whether Maeve left or if Aelin remains. Rowan listened to the wind, scented it, but felt nothing. The only way to confirm either is to go into the city.
Are those two bridges the only way in?
Elide frowned toward the twin stone bridges on the southern and northern sides of Doranel. Both open, both visible for miles around.
Yes.
Lorcan said, his voice tight. The river was too wide, too wild to swim, and if any other ways in existed, Rowan had never learned them.
We should make a wide sweep of the basin, Lorcan said, studying the city in the heart of the plain.
To the north, the forested foothills flowed to the towering wall of the Cambrian Mountains. To the west, the plain rolled into farmland, endless and open to the sea. And in the east, past the waterfall, the grassy plain yielded to ancient forests, more mountains beyond them. His mountains, the place he'd once called home, where that mountain house had stood until it had been burned, where he'd buried Lyria, and had one day expected to be laid to rest himself.
We need an exit strategy as well, Rowan said,
though he'd already been considering it. Where to run afterward. Maeve would send out her best to hunt them down. That had once included him. He'd been sent to track and dispatch the Fae who turned too monstrous for even Maeve to stomach. Rogue Fae who had no business existing anymore. He'd trained the hunters Maeve would now unleash. Had taught them the veiled paths, the places Fae preferred to hide. He'd never considered that would someday be used against him.
We take a day, Lorcan said.
Rowan leveled a cold look at him.
A day is more than we can spare.
Aelin was down there, in that city. He knew it, could feel it. He'd been plunging into his power for the past 2 days, readying for the killing he'd unleash, the flight they'd make. The strain of holding it back yanked on him, on any lingering control. Lorcan said,
We'll pay for a hasty plan if we don't take the time. Your mate will pay, too.
His former commander's control was also on a knife's edge. Even Gavriel, calm and steady, was pacing. All of them had descended into their power, drawing it up from the very dregs. But Lorcan was right. Rowan would say the same if their positions were reversed. Gavriel pointed to a rocky outcropping on the hill face below them.
It's shielded from sight. We camp there tonight, make our assessments tomorrow. Get some rest.
The idea was abhorrent, sleeping while Aelin was mere miles away. His ears strained, as if he might pick up her screams on the wind. But Rowan said,
Fine.
He didn't need to declare that they wouldn't risk a fire. The air was chill, but mild enough that they could survive. Rowan stepped down the hill face, offering a hand to Elid to help her skirt the dangerous, rocky plunge. She took his hand with shaking fingers. Still, she hadn't balked to come with them, to do any of this. Rowan found another foothold before turning to assist her.
You don't need to go into the city. We'll decide on the escape route, and you can meet us there.
When Elid didn't answer, Rowan looked up at her. Her eyes weren't on him, but on the city ahead. Wide with terror, her scent became drenched in it. Lorcan was there in a heartbeat, hand at her shoulder.
What is?
Rowan twisted toward the city. The hilltop had been a border. Not of the city limits, but of an illusion. A pretty idyllic illusion for any scouting its fringes to report. For what now surrounded the city on every side, even on the eastern plain? An army. A great army lay camped there.
She summoned most of her forces.
Gavriel breathed, wind whipping his hair across his face. Rowan counted the campfires covering the dark terrain like a blanket of stars. He'd never seen such a Fey host assembled. The ones he and the cadre had led into war didn't come close.
Aelin could be anywhere in that force,
in the camps or in the city itself. They'd have to be clever, cunning. And if Maeve had not fallen for their diversion,
she brought an army to keep us out?
Elid asked. Lorcan glanced at Rowan, his dark eyes full of warning.
Or to keep Aelin in,
Rowan surveyed the encamped army. What did those dwelling in Doranel, who rarely saw any sort of forces beyond the warriors who sometimes stalked through their city, make of the host?
We have allies in the city,
Gavriel offered.
We could try to make contact. Learn where Maeve is, what the host rallied here to do. If there's been any mention of Aelin.
Rowan's uncle, Ellis, the head of their house, had remained when Maeve's armada had sailed. A hard male, a smart male, but a loyal one. He'd trained Enda in his image, to be a sharp-minded courtier. But he'd also trained Rowan when he could, giving him some of his first lessons in swordplay. He'd grown up in his uncle's household, and it had been the only home he'd known until he'd found that mountain. But would Ellis's loyalty skew toward Maeve, or to their own bloodline, especially in the wake of the House of Whitethorn's betrayal in Eelway? His uncle might already be dead. Maeve might have punished him on behalf of all the cousins whom Rowan had begged to aid them. Or Ellis, seeking to re-enter Maeve's good graces after their betrayal, might sell them out before they could find Aelin. And as for the others, the few allies they might have?
Maeve is capable of worming her way into a person's mind, Rowan said. She likely knows who our allies are, and might have already compromised them.
He braced a hand on Goldrin's hilt, the warm metal a comforting touch.
We don't risk it.
Lorcan grunted his agreement. Elid said,
Maeve doesn't know me, or barely does. No one here would recognize me, especially if I can adjust my appearance. Like I did with spreading those lies about the Volg Prince. I could try to get into the city tomorrow and see if there's anything to learn.
No.
Lorcan's reply was a knife in the dark. Elid said to him, cool and unfazed,
You're not my commander. You're not in my court.
She turned to Rowan. But he was. He outranked her. Rowan tried not to recoil. Aelin had laid this upon him. Lorcan hissed.
She doesn't know the city layout, doesn't know how to handle the guards.
Then we teach her, Gavriel cut in, tonight. We teach her what we know.
Lorcan bared his teeth.
If Maeve remains in Doranel, she will sniff her out.
She won't, Elid said.
She found you on that beach,
Lorcan snapped. Elid lifted her chin.
I am going into that city tomorrow.
And what are you going to do? Ask if Aelin Galathinius has been strutting about town. Ask if Maeve's available for high tea.
Lorcan's snarl ripped through the air. Elid didn't back down for a heartbeat.
I'm going to ask after Cairn.
They all stilled. Rowan wasn't entirely certain he'd heard her correctly. Elid steadily surveyed them.
Surely a young mortal woman is allowed to inquire about a fey male who jilted her.
Lorcan went pale as the moon above them.
Elid.
When she didn't reply, Lorcan whirled on Rowan.
We'll scout. There's another way to...
Elid only said to Rowan,
Find Cairn, and we find Aelin, and learn if Maeve remains.
Fear no longer bloomed in Elid's eyes. Not a trace remained in her scent. So Rowan nodded, even as Lorcan tensed.
Good hunting, lady.
Chapter 22. The snow-crusted plains of Terrasen flowed southward, right to the rolling foothills that spread to the horizon. Earlier this summer, Lysandra had crossed those foothills with her companions, with her queen. Had watched Aelin ascend one and stride to the carved granite stone jutting from its top. The marker of the border between Otterlin and Terrasen. Her friend had taken a step beyond the stone and had been home. Perhaps it made Lysandra a fool, but she had not realized that the next time she'd see the foothills again, wearing the feathers of a bird,
it would be in war. Or as a scout for an army thousands of soldiers strong, marching far behind her. She'd left Adian to figure out how to explain Aelin's sudden disappearance when she'd departed for this scouting mission, to glean where they might at last intercept Morath's legions and give the general a lay of the terrain ahead. Fae scouts in their own avian forms had flown to the west and east to see what they might learn as well. Her silvery falcon's wings wrangled the bitter wind, setting her soaring with a speed that shot liquid lightning through her heart. Beyond the ghost leopard, this form had become a favorite. Swift, sleek, vicious. This body had been built to ride the winds, to run down prey. The snow had stopped, but the sky remained gray, not a hint of the sun to warm them. The cold was a secondary concern, made bearable by her layers of feathers. For long miles she flew and flew, scanning the empty terrain. Villages they had passed through during the summer had been emptied, their inhabitants fleeing north. She prayed they'd found safe harbor before the snows, that the magic wielders within those villages got far from Morath's nets. There had been a girl in one of the towns who had been blessed with a powerful water gift. Had she and her family been taken in behind Orinth's thick walls? Lysandra caught an updraft and soared higher, the horizon revealing more of itself. The first of the foothills passed below, ridges of light and shadow under the cloudy sky. Getting the army over them would not be a simple task, but the Bane had fought near here before. They undoubtedly knew the path through, despite the snowdrifts piled high in the hollows. The wind screamed, shoving northward, as if warding her from flying south, begging her not to continue. Hills crowned with stones appeared, the ancient border markings. She swept past them. A few hours lingered until darkness fell. She'd fly until night and cold rendered her unable, and find some tree to hunker down in until she could resume scouting at dawn. She sailed farther south, the horizon bleak and empty. Until it wasn't. Until she beheld what marched toward them and nearly tumbled from the sky. Ren had taught her how to count soldiers, yet she lost track each time she attempted to get a number on the neat lines stomping across Otterland's northern plains, right toward the foothills that spanned both territories. Thousands. 5, 10, 15,000, more. Again and again she stumbled on counting. 20, 30. Lysandra rose higher into the sky. Higher because winged Ilkin flew with them, soaring low over the black armored troops, monitoring all that passed below. 40, 50, 50,000 troops, overseen by Ilkin. And amongst them, on horseback, rode beautiful-faced young men, black collars at their throats above their armor. Volg princes, 5 in total, each commanding a legion. Lysandra counted the force again, thrice. 50,000 troops, against the 25,000 they had gathered. One of the Ilkin spotted her and flapped upward. Lysandra banked hard and swept back north, wings beating like hell. The two armies met in the snow-covered fields of southern Terrasen. Terrasen's general prince had ordered them to wait, rather than rush to meet Morath's legions, to let Erewhon's hordes exhaust themselves on the foothills, and to send an advance force of the silent assassins to pick off soldiers struggling amid the bumps and hollows. Only some of the assassins returned. The dark power of the Volg princes swept ahead, devouring all in their path. And still, the Firebringer did not blast the Volg to ash, did nothing but ride at her cousin's side. Ilkin descended upon their camp in the night, unleashing chaos and terror, shredding soldiers with their poison-slick claws before escaping to the skies. They ripped the ancient border stones from their grassy hilltops as they passed into Terrasen. Barely winded, unfazed by the snow, and hardly thinned out, Morath's army left the last of the foothills.
They rushed down the hillsides, a black wave breaking over the land. Right onto the spears and shields of the Bane, the magic of the Fae soldiers keeping the power of the Volg princes at bay. It could not stand against the Ilken, however. They swept through it like cobwebs in a doorway, some spewing their venom to melt the magic. Then the Ilken landed, or shattered through their defenses entirely. And even a shapeshifter in the form of a wyvern armed with poisoned spikes could not take them all down. Even a general prince with an ancient sword and fey instincts could not slice through their necks fast enough. In the chaos, no one noticed that the Firebringer did not appear, that not an ember of her flame glowed in the screaming night. Then the foot soldiers reached them, and that cobbled together army began to sunder. The right flank broke first. A Volg prince unleashed his power, men lying dead in his wake. It took Ilias of the Silent Assassins sneaking behind enemy lines to decapitate him for the slaughter to staunch. The Bane's center lines held, yet they lost yard after yard to claws and fangs and sword and shield. So many of the enemy that the Fae royals and their kin couldn't choke the air from their throats fast enough, widely enough. Whatever advances the Fae's magic bought them did not slow Morath for long. Morath's beasts pushed them northward that first day, and into the night. And at dawn the next day, by nightfall on the second, even the Bane's line had buckled. Still, Morath did not stop coming. Chapter 23. Elide had never seen such a place as Doranel. The City of Rivers, they called it. She'd never imagined that a city could be built in the heart of several as they met and poured into a mighty basin. She didn't let the awe show on her face as she strode through the winding, neat streets. Fear was another companion that she kept at bay. With the Fae's heightened sense of smell, they could detect things like emotion. And though a good dose of fear would aid in her cover, too much would spell her doom. Yet this place seemed like a paradise. Pink and blue flowers draped from windowsills. Little canals wended between some of the streets, ferrying people in bright long boats. She'd never seen so many Fae, had never thought they'd be utterly normal. Well, as normal as possible, with their grace and those ears and canines. Along with the animals rushing around her, flitting past, so many forms she couldn't keep track of them. All perfectly content to go about their daily business, buying everything from crusty loaves of bread to jugs of some sort of oil to vibrant swaths of fabric. Yet ruling over everything, squatting in the palace on the eastern side of Doranel, was Maeve. And this city, Rowan had told Elide, had been built from stone to keep Brannon or any of his descendants from razing it to the ground. Elide fought the limp that grew with each step farther into the city, farther away from Gavriel's magic. She'd left them in the forested foothills where they'd camped the night before, and Lorcan had again tried to argue against her going. But she'd rummaged through their various packs until she'd found what she needed. Berries Gavriel had gathered yesterday, a spare belt and dark green cape from Rowan, a wrinkled white shirt from Lorcan, and a tiny mirror he used for shaving. She hadn't said anything when she'd found the white strips of linen at the bottom of Lorcan's bag, waiting for her next cycle. She hadn't been able to find the words, anyway, not with what it would crumple in her chest to even think them. Elide kept her shoulders loose, though her face remained tight as she paused at the edge of a pretty little square around a burbling fountain. Vendors and shoppers milled about, chatting in the mid-morning sunshine. Elide paused by the square's arched entrance, putting her back to it, and fished the little mirror out of her cloak pocket, careful not to jostle the knives hidden there as well. She flicked open the compact, frowning at her reflection, half of the expression not entirely faked. She'd crushed the berries at dawn and carefully lined her eyes with the juices, turning them red-rimmed and miserable-looking, as if she'd been weeping for weeks.
Indeed. The face that pouted back at her was rather wretched. But it wasn't the reflection she wanted to see, but rather the square behind her. Surveying it outright might raise too many questions. But if she was merely staring into a compact mirror, no more than a self-conscious girl trying to fix her frazzled appearance. Elide smoothed some strands of her hair while monitoring the square beyond. A hub of sorts. Two taverns lined its sides, judging by the wine barrels that served as tables out front and the empty glasses atop them, yet to be collected. Between the two taverns, one seemed to attract more males, some in warrior garb. Of the three squares she'd visited, the taverns she'd spotted, this was the only one with soldiers. Perfect. Elide smoothed her hair again, shut the compact, and turned back to the square, lifting her chin. A girl trying to muster some dignity. Let them see what they wanted to see. Let them look at the white shirt she'd donned in lieu of the leather witch's jacket, the green cape draped over herself belted across the middle, and think her an unfashionable, unworldly traveler. A girl far out of her element in this lovely, well-dressed city. She approached the seven fae lounging outside the tavern, sizing up who talked most, laughed loudest, who the five males and two females often turned to. One of the females wasn't a warrior, but rather clothed in soft feminine pants and a cornflower blue tunic that fit her lush figure like a glove. Elide marked the one who they seemed to glance to the most in confirmation and hope of approval. A broad-shouldered female, her dark hair cropped close to her head. She wore armor on her shoulders and wrists, finer than what the other males wore. Their commander, then. Elide lingered a few feet away, a hand rising to clutch her cape where it draped across her heart, the other fiddling with the golden ring on her finger, the invaluable heirloom little more than a lover's keepsake. Gnawing on her lip, she cast uncertain, darting eyes on the soldiers, on the tavern, sniffled a little. The other female, the one in the fine blue clothes, noticed her first. She was beautiful, Elide realized. Her dark hair falling in a thick, glossy braid down her back, her golden brown skin shone with an inner light. Her eyes were soft with kindness and concern. Elide took that concern as invitation and stumbled up to them, head bowing.
I'm sorry to interrupt,
she blurted, speaking more to the dark-haired beauty. The stammer had always made people uncomfortable, had always made them foolishly off guard and eager to get away, to tell her what she needed to know.
Is something wrong?
The female's voice was husky, lovely, the sort of voice Elide had always imagined great beauties possessing. The sort of voice that made men fall all over themselves. From the way some of the males around her had been smiling, Elide had no doubt the female had that effect on them, too. Elide wobbled her lip, chewed on it.
I was looking for someone. He said he'd be here, but...
She glanced to the warriors and toyed with the ring on her finger again.
I saw your uniforms and thought you might know him.
The merriment of the little company had died out, replaced by wariness and pity from the beauty. Either at the stutter or what she so clearly saw, a young woman pining for a lover who likely was not there.
What's his name?
Asked the taller female. Perhaps the other's sister, judging by their same dusky skin and dark hair. Elide swallowed hard enough to make her throat bob rather pathetically.
I hate to bother you,
she demurred.
But you all looked very kind.
One of the males muttered something about getting another round of drinks, and two of his companions decided to join him. The two males who lingered seemed inclined to go as well, but a sharp look from their commander had them staying.
It's not a bother,
the beauty said, waving a manicured hand. She was as short as Elide, though she carried herself like a queen.
Would you like us to fetch you some refreshments?
People were easy to flatter, easy to trick, regardless of whether they had pointy ears or round. Elid stepped closer.
No, thank you. I wouldn't want to trouble you.
The female's nostrils flared as Elid halted close enough to touch them, no doubt smelling the weeks on the road. But she politely said nothing, though her eyes roved over Elid's face.
Your friend's name,
the commander urged, her gruff voice the opposite of her sister's.
Cairn,
Elid whispered.
His name is Cairn.
One of the males swore. The other scanned Elid from head to toe. But the two females had gone still.
He serves the queen?
Elid said, eyes leaping from face to face, the portrait of hope.
Do you know him?
We know him, the commander said, her face dark. You are his lover?
Elid willed her face to redden, thinking of all the mortifying moments on the road, her cycle, having to explain when she needed to relieve herself.
I need to speak with him,
was all Elid said. Learning Maeve's whereabouts would come later. The dark-haired beauty said a shade too quietly.
What is your name, child?
Finula,
Elid lied, naming her nursemaid.
Here's a bit of advice,
the second male drawled, sipping from his ale.
If you escaped Cairn, don't go looking for him again.
His commander shot him a look. Cairn is bloodsworn to our queen.
Still makes him a prick,
the male said. The female growled, viciously enough that the male wisely went to see about their drinks. Elid made her shoulders curve inward.
You know him then?
Cairn was supposed to meet you here?
The beauty asked instead. Elid nodded. The two females exchanged glances. The commander said,
We don't know where he is.
Lie. She saw the look between them, between sisters. The decision to not tell her, either to protect the helpless mortal girl they believed her to be, or out of some loyalty to him. Or perhaps to all Fae who decided to find beds in mortal realms and then ignore the consequences months later. Lorkin had been the result of such a union, and then discarded to the mercy of these streets. The thought was enough to set her grinding her teeth, but Elid kept her jaw relaxed.
Don't be angry, Finula had taught her. Be smart.
She made note of that. Not to appear too pathetic at the next tavern, or like a jilted lover who might be carrying his child. For she'd have to go to another one. And if she got an answer the next time, she'd have to go to another after that to confirm it.
Is the queen in residence?
Elid said, that beseeching, whining voice grating on her own ears.
He said he travels with her now, but if she is not here...
Her Majesty is not at home,
the commander said, sharply enough that Elid knew her patience was wearing thin. Elid didn't allow her knees to buckle, didn't allow her shoulders to sag with anything but what they took to be disappointment.
But where Cairn is, as I said, we do not know.
Maeve was not here. They had that in their favor, at least. Whether it was luck or due to their own scheming, she didn't care. But Cairn, she'd learned nothing more from these females. So Elid bowed her head.
Thank you.
She backed away before the females could say any more, and made a good show of waiting by the fountain for 5 minutes. 15. The clock on the square struck the hour, and she knew they were still watching, as she did her best attempt at a dejected walk to the other entrance to the square. She kept it up for a few blocks, wandering with no direction, until she ducked into a narrow pass-through and heaved a breath.
Maeve was not in Doranau. How long would that remain true?
She had to find Cairn, swiftly. Had to make her next performance count. She'd need to be less pathetic, less needy, less weepy. Perhaps she'd added too much redness around her eyes. Elid fished out the mirror,
Swiping her pinky under one eye, she rubbed at some of the red stain. It didn't budge. Moistening the tip of her pinky with her tongue, she ran her finger across her lower lid again. It lessened, slightly. She was about to do it again, when movement flashed in the mirror. Elide whirled, but too late. The dark-haired beauty from the tavern was standing behind her. Lorcan had never felt the weight of the hours so heavily upon him. While he scouted the southern border of that army, watching the soldiers on their rotations, noting the main arteries of the camp, he kept one eye upon the city. His city, or it had been. He'd never imagined, even during the childhood he'd spent surviving in its shadows, that it would become an enemy stronghold. That Maeve, while she'd whipped and punished him for any defiance or for her own amusement, would become as great a foe as Erewhon. And to send Elide into Maeve's clutches? It had taken all of his will to let her walk away. If Elide was captured, if she was found out, he wouldn't hear of it, know of it. She had no magic to wield save for the keen eyes of the goddess at her shoulder and an uncanny ability to remain unnoticed, to play into expectations. There would be no flash of power, no signal to alert him that she was in danger. But he stayed away. Had watched her cross that bridge earlier, his breath tight in his chest, and passed unquestioned and unnoticed by the guards posted at either end. While Maeve did not allow demi-fae or humans to live within Dorinel's borders without proving their worth, they could still visit, briefly. Then he'd gone about scouting. He knew Whitethorn had ordered him to study the southern edge, this edge, because it was precisely where she'd emerge, if she emerged. Whitethorn and Gavriel had divided up the other camps, the prince claiming the west and the north, the lion taking the eastern camp above the waterfall's basin. The afternoon sun was sinking toward the distant sea when they returned to their little base.
Anything?
Rowan's question rumbled to them. Lorcan shook his head.
Not from Elide, not from my scouting. The sentry's rotations are strict, but not impenetrable. They posted scouts in the trees 6 miles up.
He knew some of them, had commanded them. Were they now his enemy? Gavriel shifted and slumped onto a boulder, equally out of breath.
They've got aerial patrols on the eastern camp, and sentries out by the forest's border.
Rowan leaned against a towering pine and crossed his arms.
What manner of birds?
Raptors, mostly,
Gavriel said. Highly trained soldiers, then. They'd always been the sharpest of the scouts.
I didn't recognize any from your house.
They either had all been in that armada, now in Terrasen, or Maeve had put them down. Rowan ran a hand over his jaw.
The western plain camp is as tightly guarded, the northern one less so, but the wolves in the passes are likely doing half the work for them.
They didn't bother to discuss what that army might have gathered to do, where it might be headed. If Maeve's defeat off the Eelway coast might be enough to lead her into an alliance with Morath, and to bring this army to crush Terrasen at last. Lorcan gazed down the wooded hillside, ears straining for any cracking branches or leaves. A half hour. He'd wait a half hour before going down that hill. He forced himself to listen to Whitethorn and Gavriel lay out entry points and exit strategies for each camp. Forced himself to join in that debate. Forced himself to also discuss the possible entrances and exits from Dorinel itself, where they might go in the city, how they might get over and back across without bringing down the wrath of that army. An army they'd once overseen and commanded. None of them mentioned it, though Gavriel kept glancing to the tattoos inked on his hands. How many more lives would he need to add before they were through? His soldiers not felled by enemy blows, but by his own blade. The sun inched closer to the horizon. Lorcan began pacing. Too long. It had taken too long. The others had fallen silent, too.
gazing down the hill. Waiting. A slight tremor rocked Lorcan's hands, and he balled them into fists, squeezing hard. 5 minutes. He'd go in 5 minutes, Aelin, Galathinius, and their plan be damned. Aelin had been trained to endure torture. Elide. He could see those scars on her from the shackles. See her maimed foot and ankle. She had endured too much suffering and terror already. He couldn't allow her to face another heartbeat of it. Twigs snapped under light feet, and Lorcan shot upright, a hand going to his sword. Whitethorn thumbed free the hatchet at his side, a knife appearing in his other hand, and Gavriel drew his sword. But then a two-note whistle echoed, and Lorcan's legs wobbled so violently he sat back onto the rock where he'd been perched. Gavriel whistled back, and Lorcan was grateful for it. He wasn't sure he had the breath. Then she was there, panting from the climb, her cheeks rosy in the cool night air.
What happened?
Whitethorn asked. Lorcan scanned her face, her posture. She was fine. She was unhurt. There was no enemy on her tail. Elide's eyes met his, wary and uncertain.
I met someone.
Elide had thought she was about to die, or had at least believed that she was going to be sold out to Maeve, when she'd faced the dark-haired beauty in the shadowed alley. She'd told herself, in those heartbeats, that she'd do her best to withstand the torture sure to come, to keep her companion's location secret, even if they broke apart her body. But the prospect of what they'd do to her. The female held up a delicate hand.
I only wish to talk. In private.
She gestured farther down the alley, to a doorstop covered with a metal awning. To shield them from any eyes, those on the ground and above. Elide followed her, a hand sliding to the knife in her pocket.